Good evening, everybody. Brian Alvarez here on a brand new edition of After Dark Radio here at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. It is November 4th, 2011. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We are joined, as we are every week, by Carl Stern to talk all of the news. And Carl's going to be on for the entire show today. No guest today. At least no guest yet. We may have somebody coming on here in a bit. I've sent out some emails trying to contact Nicholas De Leon, because he, hopefully, will come on to talk a little bit about trending. What does it mean when you trend on Twitter? Now, obviously, a lot of this has to do with my other job, WrestlingObserver.com, and the fact that every Monday night on Raw, WWE is attempting to trend on Twitter. And when they do, it's a big deal for them. And I attempted to get myself trending on Twitter today, and I can announce to everybody that, in fact, I failed. But I did manage to make a pretty big spike, and I don't know what this all means, but I almost got above 0%. And apparently there are different percentages below zero. There's apparently 0.000. I don't know. I don't know anything about math. But if Nicholas De Leon is around, we're going to get him on the show, and we'll talk about trending. How could I get myself to Twitter? Is it a big deal? Perhaps we'll find out today. And if not, we will soon. Carl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. I am on Twitter as we speak. I actually, I've been on Twitter for, I guess, a year or so now. It's actually been probably a little longer than that. I use Twitter, actually. One of the things we'll talk about is how you can make use of Twitter, because one of the biggest complaints I hear about, Facebook is a usable thing that where you can contact friends and you can keep up with family and things like it. It's just obvious the applications for it, but Twitter is one of those things that anytime I mention it to somebody, they always say, "Well, it's useless. What good is it?" And the answer is, I don't know, generally speaking, but I actually have found some ways to make Twitter useful, and we can talk about some of that today. I'm going to suggest some apps for your mobile device that can make sense of Twitter and actually make it an enjoyable experience. And I have two Twitter accounts. You can one I use for weather spotting. I'm in my other job, as you mentioned yours, I am a law enforcement officer. I use it for weather spotting as a trained storm spotter, and the other I use for any type of nonsense, and that's Dragon King Carl. So you can follow me on there. I'm probably never going to trend, but I am on there.
Took me a long time to get on Twitter. People are always telling me, "Oh, you got to get on Twitter. Oh, you got to get on Twitter." And there were always, there was a time when social media was starting to take off, where it seemed like there was a new one every single week. And it was like, okay, I'm on, first there was MySpace, which I don't even know anybody uses MySpace anymore. I'm sure they're out there. Some of them may be listening right now. But then it was Facebook, and then Twitter was coming up. And me personally, it was like, okay, I'm going to wait around. I'll see if this Twitter thing takes off, because this could be one of 100 that starts up and you never hear about it again 3 weeks later. Well, Twitter took off. So ended up getting a Twitter account. I'm at BrianAlvarez.com. You can head up there and follow my Twitter. And I also never really understood what the point of Twitter was. It was always like, okay, yeah, I went to the grocery store. Now 5,000 people know. What does that mean? And I'm really not even sure today what that really means, because this is something that, I know we don't talk a lot about wrestling on this show, but this has to do with more than just wrestling. It has to do with many forms of entertainment. The issue of piracy. And we had a promoter of a wrestling company on our show yesterday, Gabe Sapolsky of Dragon Gate USA, who was talking about piracy and how his business is suffering quite a bit because people are pirating the DVDs as opposed to buying them. And he made a point, both on the show and in discussions with myself off the air, that there are a lot of companies where it seems there's a lot of buzz about them. He was talking about PWG, and after the PWG DVD ended up on torrent sites, there was a lot of buzz about the company. And he noted that sometimes I see that there's a lot of buzz around certain promotions, but if you actually talk to the people running the promotions, they're not making any money. Because at this point, great buzz does not equal money. And that was part of the experiment I was doing here today with Twitter was, let's see if I can make myself trend worldwide. Because obviously that's WWE's big deal on Monday night, and many other people are attempting to trend worldwide. And I didn't get myself trending worldwide, but I had more people talking about me today on Twitter than ever before. That's a fact, because I never attempted anything like this before, and I'm not on Twitter very much. But there were a lot of people talking about me on Twitter, and at the end of the day, do I have one extra dollar? Does this mean anything to me? I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know what effect this had on my life or on my business to trend, at least to a degree, on Twitter.
Well, I think it's one of those interesting things where it's a little more complicated than that. I've just noticed off of the retweets I've been doing of everybody that has been tweeting hashtag Brian Alvarez, that I've picked up a significant number of followers just off of retweeting that, where, I've picked up probably so far, 30 or 40 new followers on Twitter that I didn't have before. Now, how does that translate into money? Well, it doesn't. I think Twitter is one of those interesting kind of things where it has positive applications for some businesses and some it doesn't. Obviously, the biggest benefit for a large company such as you brought up WWE as an example, because they have been so proactive in pushing Twitter recently. But this applies to any company, technology, whatever. Is that it's a way to interact with that company. It makes you feel more a part of the process, and it's one of those things that I think actually just enhances your experience with the company rather than actually generates profit or brings in new fans or whatever the case may be. For example, if you feel let's take college football for instance. Tomorrow is one of the biggest games in years that is taking place in my state, Alabama, where LSU is playing the University of Alabama's number one and number two in the country are facing in the regular season, and this doesn't happen very often, but it's happening tomorrow. Now, I'm not buying a ticket to that game. It's sold out, obviously, but if it were not, I'm not going. I have to work tomorrow, and so I would be watching it on television anyway. However, I can be part of the process and feel part of the cheering my team on and so forth by being a part of the Twitter and following the tweets and what different people are saying and what different news outlets are putting on. So it is a more immersive experience to get in there rather than necessarily a revenue generator. However, with WWE, for example, and not only just them, but say mixed martial arts or some company, some sport like that, it can have a negative effect, actually. One of the things that has generated so much fandom, and especially a cult or subgenre sport like wrestling or something like that, one of the things is these performers in the past have felt larger than life. They felt like, they're superheroes almost. They're fictional characters beyond, we don't associate them as having everyday problems and normal things in life. Don't think about, John Cena doing his laundry or paying his bills or things like that, because these are larger than life characters and you want to live vicariously through them. And so in a way, Twitter and social media kind of breaks that fourth wall between you and them and can have a negative effect, whereas in my living room, if I want to, cheer for, who is CM Punk, for example, or whoever, pick your favorite sports star, here there's that fourth wall between me and them, whereas they are, for all intents and purposes, a character on television. Even if they're a real-life sports figure, like a football player or something, not playing a character, they're still untouchable to me in my normal life. A rock band, for instance, a great example of a rock band. I'm a giant fan of the group Rush. I know, Brian, you also love Rush with all your heart and soul.
Oh, yeah.
I love Rush, and, but I don't want to have dinner with Neil Peart. He and I probably would not get along. But that doesn't affect how his art and his craft affects me. And yet, if I were to be corresponding with him regularly on Twitter, well, it destroys that illusion of larger than life. It destroys that whatever you've made in your mind of these people being. And so I think actually for something like WWE or something like, you know, a rock group or a larger life sports figure, it may actually be counterproductive.
Well, I think the key with Twitter is that in order to, I guess when you think of a larger than life character, you have these certain expectations about them. And if a person goes on Twitter and destroys that illusion, then that's bad. But I think that just going on Twitter and maybe responding to a fan here and there, I mean, to me, that's not a big deal because, you know, some of the biggest stars of all time, you know, you'll hear a story about so-and-so. Oh, I got a letter. I actually got a handwritten letter. Not recently, of course, because nobody writes handwritten letters, but, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Oh, I got a handwritten letter when I sent them a piece of fan mail. It was so nice.
Yeah, and, or an autograph or something.
Sure, an autograph or whatever. You know, maybe, you know, let's just say that I was walking down the street and somebody fell off a bridge at Country Village into the pond and I yanked them out and saved their life. You know, maybe the President of the United States, whoever that might be at the time, would give me a call and congratulate me. And, you know, that wouldn't ruin my vision of this person that he took the time out of his day to call me. I just think that's really cool. But I think the problem is that when people go on Twitter, I think that people want to believe that their heroes are, as you said, larger than life, and they live a special sort of life. And when your hero goes on Twitter and you realize that they're a huge geek, that's what ruins the illusion. So I think that Twitter can be used very successfully by superstars. It has to be used sparingly, obviously, and they have to, I don't want to say keep up the facade, but not reveal themselves to be complete idiots. That, I think, is when Twitter is very detrimental to a person.
Yeah, I think that's great points. For example, if I were running a company like WWE or something, I'm not sure I would allow my biggest stars on there. I would want some articulate, fairly well-adjusted members of my lower level talent to be my Twitter representative, so to speak, on there, or somebody that, say, has a cult following, somebody like Zack Ryder or something like that, where they have this sort of cult following. And but it's much to the, and again, I don't want to get bogged down in wrestling talk on this show, but it's much of the same as you had back in the 1980s when Hulk Hogan was the top star and champion of WWF. He never wrestled on TV, ever. You bought a ticket, you had to see him. And I wouldn't want necessarily my top money sellers, my top ticket sellers out there just interacting with fans like on a every, you know, just becoming friends with them and on Facebook and all this stuff where they actually felt like they were part of this life, because, again, I think you do sort of shatter that larger-than-life illusion that's set up. And we need that as entertainment goes. I mean, that's the reason we have sports and things like that, because there are athletes out there doing things that we can't do, or at least at a level higher than we could do them. And to relate to these people as just your next-door neighbor and so forth, while that may seem like a great thing, it's really not. It really shatters the illusion of what's going on there. But one of the things that I found that makes Twitter really usable is for most of your mobile devices, the iPad, iPhone, Android, and such, there's a great application called Flipboard. And I think it's a pay app. I don't remember. I bought it so long ago, but it's not very expensive if it's not free. But it takes your Twitter feed and puts it together in a magazine, essentially. It takes everyone you're following, and if they put pictures in it or whatever, it brings them up and essentially makes it an online magazine for you to read. It makes that information that's just coming at you wide open, it makes it usable and readable. And what I've found to make it, and it's one of the applications I use every day, and again, you know, my iPad, I'm sure like most people, is just full of apps that you probably never touch or forgot it's on there, but this one I use every day. I go to a lot of the newspapers and news sources locally for me, things I'm interested in, weather, sports, whatever the case may be, whatever your particular favorite thing is, and website, and almost everybody has a Twitter account now. And so I follow them, and that whenever I open up Flipboard, I have an up-to-date, I mean, really real-time news magazine of what I'm interested in, be it sports entertainment, be it comic books, be it, you know, rock music or, you know, college football or whatever your particular area of interest is in, After Dark Radio, Monsters, whatever, you know, whatever you enjoy. Follow them on Twitter and use Flipboard to aggregate that to your mobile device. And I found it makes it a real usable way to use Twitter. And a lot of the people that have said, you know, I'm not getting on Twitter, it's just, you know, stupidity of somebody saying I had such and such for lunch and whatever. I said, no, there's actually a way to use it. You know, you go to, most everybody has probably five or six websites they visit every day. That's the ones they go through, your local newspaper or TV outlet, your, you know, whatever. Your thing is, well, stream those to your Flipboard account by way of Twitter, and you've got something real-time, up-to-date, and makes it a much more usable experience to be on there. And Flipboard also takes, like, you can set up news feed accounts with, like, your Google Reader or even Facebook, as a matter of fact. So as we move more toward the mobile device era, and let's face it, that's where we're headed. I mean, I don't know that mobile devices have even peaked yet. This is the kind of information that a lot of people are going to use more and more, and these useful things like that are going to be the technology that I think really, really breaks over the next couple of years.
I believe that we may get Nicholas De Leon on in about 10 minutes. So let's move away from this discussion for a minute. And in about 10 minutes, we'll get Nicholas on the air. He actually works for, I believe it's called The Daily. It's the new iPad publication that News Corp puts out. Yes, The Daily. He's a writer, a reporter for them, so he'll know plenty about this subject. So.
Oh, I look forward to hearing that because that's one of those things I've been kind of on the edge of subscribing to, and it's going to be interesting to hear about that. It's a big gamble News Corp took with that, and so there's been a lot of talk about it recently.
I was thinking about that as well, so we'll get him on with you as well. So if you've got questions, we'll get some of those in from you too. So, all right, let's get into some of the other news. We'll come back to this in just a moment, since obviously there'll be more to talk about. Let's go to the website, BrianAlvarez.com, AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the place to go for all the news. We got a lot of cool stories up there today. Didn't have a chance to do a lot of updates over the past week, but I'm trying to get this site updated at least every couple of days, but there's a lot of stuff up there now, so head over there. One thing that I wanted to talk to you about is this article here, City Lights Could Reveal E.T. Civilization. This one's kind of interesting. There has been talk for many years about how do we detect extraterrestrial civilizations, and you know, they've got the big telescopes and the satellites and satellite dishes, and you see the big arrays and everything like that, and different ways to attempt to find out if we're alone in the universe. And this theory is that what we need is simply a better telescope, and at that point we could look into the night sky and perhaps we would see planets with city lights illuminating them. So instead of having to worry about signals or are these civilizations using radio waves, all we do is we get a powerful telescope, we look at a faraway planet. Does the planet have city lights at night? If so, there's probably life there.
Yeah, to me it brings up a larger issue that, and that is the issue of satellite building. You know, we've put the rovers on Mars to go up there, and we've had several missions to the moon and so forth. To me, one of the things we should have been doing, especially on the far side of the moon, is building a telescope. With all the information the Hubble telescope has given us over the last, 20 years or however long it's been up in space, it just seems to me like it would be a so much better to build a telescope, a large telescope on the far side of the moon where, you know, there's no atmospheric problems and there's no worries about a lot of things that you have on here on Earth, and even you wouldn't have to keep the thing in orbit. You could build it there, and basically it's going to be only involving maintenance ever so often. And we need to be doing things like that more than we are. I understand, you know, we've learned a lot from sending these probes out in space, especially Cassini, Huygens, and probes of that nature. We've learned a lot about the outer planets especially, but with very powerful telescopes such as Hubble, if we could put them in a stationary position on a planet, especially like the dark side of the moon or the far side of the moon, rather, and even further out in space, if need be, Mars or whatever, this looks to me like there would be so much more we could learn, and we may get closer to seeing something like this. It's a good idea, trying to look for artificial illumination on different planets and stuff, but there's also going to be some, you're going to have to figure out how do you tell the difference between volcanic activity and artificial light and things like that. And, of course, with spectrometers and stuff, I suppose that's is already the technology there to do that. But it's interesting. I think we should be way more into telescope building than we are. You know, we just ended the space shuttle program after, 30 years or so, and we should be working on that. Should be our next step rather than building bigger rockets to get further out. We should be doing more exploration with telescopes.
So I hear you like last week's show.
Oh, I love it. Man, that was a great show.
Have you got a chance to check out the book yet?
Absolutely. I haven't read it yet, but I have bought it, downloaded it through Kindle. In the Kindle app for iPad, and of course we're going to differ on breaking the speed of light, but I love that stuff in a layman's term way of writing and speaking. That just makes it that much better because again, not everybody has the mental capacity to be a theoretical physicist, but everybody does have imagination and. A lot of the stuff we've figured out over the years has not necessarily been stuff that, haven't been the most educated people who figured out. I mean, look at Thomas Edison for an example. He was not a professor of anything. He didn't even finish high school. So putting that out there, a lot of people have different talents and stuff, and to get people interested in those sort of topics, that's great. I mean, I look forward to reading the book for sure.
Now, since we were talking last week about my physics class when I was in high school, which absolutely sucked. Did you have a physics class in high school, and did you enjoy it, or did it also suck, and you discovered physics later when you realized it didn't need to suck so bad?
That's exactly it. In fact, the story you told is almost... It could very well be identical to my feelings. I mean, it was just so math. I'm like you. Math's never been my thing at all. And I've never had much training in the higher math. I was never inclined to be an engineer or anything like that. And thank goodness for that because my skills certainly don't fall in that area. But science interested me. And it's kind of one of those crossover things, sort of like chemistry, where it has, both mathematical and scientific applications. But I couldn't get past the math part, and all these great equations and stuff. It really was counterproductive toward my interest in physics and stuff. And later in life, it's been one of my most the things I enjoy reading about the most, and just. Obviously, with literature, and I've been a writer for most of my life, and have enjoyed writing and reading and so forth, because it spurs the imagination, and it's like the guest last week said, these are real things. We're not even talking fantasy here. That sometimes reality, especially when you get into the world of physics and theoretical physics and so forth, is crazier. You know, the truth is stranger than fiction, as the old story, as the old saying goes, and so yeah, it actually worked counterproductive to be sitting in high school bored to death with all these equations that you don't understand and don't want to understand written on the board, whereas the topic itself in a wider expanse is very, very riveting, just absolutely phenomenal.
All right, Carl, hold on 1 second. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to get Nicholas DeLeon here on the show, and we're going to talk more about Twitter technology and iPad apps here on After Dark Radio at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. We are back here on After Dark Radio, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Carl Stern here, along with Brian Alvarez. I am Brian. That's Carl. Just for anybody confused. We got Nicholas DeLeon here on the line. He is a reporter at The Daily, which is the new iPad publication that News Corp is putting out. And Carl's going to have some questions for you about that in just a second. But Nicholas, first off, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. How about you guys?
Not too bad. So today, as you may or may not be aware, I attempted to trend worldwide on Twitter, and yes. I failed. But I did get a spike, and I think what I need to do for the next time around is I need to better coordinate all of my attempts into a smaller window of time. I alerted everybody on Facebook. I kind of threw out something last night on the show, and then about 40 minutes later, I posted something on the front page of the website, and I think that everything was just way too spread out for this ever to work anyway, but if I concentrated it all into a small period of time, would that work? And explain to everybody, what does trending even mean?
Well, I mean, I was fascinated by the topic because I know you and Dave had discussed at length WWE's obsession with trying to trend. So I actually contacted Twitter to see, like, have they defined what trending even means? I mean, it's something to, you know, be chasing after a goal, but unless that goal is, you know, defined, I mean, it'd be pretty silly. So they actually got back to me and said, yes, we defined trending late last year, and it's not necessarily just, like, the raw popularity of any given topic. It's more about, like, the breaking newsiness of a topic. So that if there's all of a sudden spike in, you know, tweets, let's just say John Cena or whatever, then yeah, that might be a trending topic. That doesn't necessarily mean that the whole world is tweeting about John Cena. It just means that there is a sudden spike in John Cena tweets. I mean, obviously there's a correlation between you know, you could define, okay, that it shows he's popular. It's like, yeah, he does, but that doesn't, the way they're trying to spin it on Raw, it's like oh, look, everyone's talking about us. It's like, well, I mean, if anything, it could just be that your audience is talking about Cena now at 9 p.m. because that's when Raw starts and that's when they start tweeting about Cena anyway. So, I mean, that's what I've come up with in this whole sort of investigation into what trending means.
Now, how many people do you think would need to send out the hashtag Brian Alvarez in what period of time in order for me to trend, do you believe?
That's information Twitter was not willing to divulge. They didn't. They just referred to an algorithm. They didn't say the specific time frame or the magic number to hit to get something trending. But I would imagine it would have to be a number of people in a pretty quick period of time, just given what they were willing to say. So I mean, they haven't revealed the actual number, so there's no real way to say it one way or the other. But, I mean, I don't think it's going to work if all of a sudden 20 people start hashtagging, Brian Alvarez. I think it's going to be a little more than that. I'm just guessing. I mean, given they had cited the whole WikiLeaks situation late last year, people were complaining, oh, why isn't WikiLeaks trending? It's because while the topic was popular over, you know, a long amount of time, it wasn't as breaking, like, sudden spike as you need to get something trending. So they were very keen to stress that trending, it's you need to think about trending as like a breaking news type of thing. Like, oh my God, this is happening. And then you got a certain number of people all of a sudden talking about it. Not necessarily the whole world talking in unison about this topic at length.
So, and it seems to be in a very short window of time as well.
Yeah, it does seem to be, it's a spike. It's like something wasn't happening 5 minutes ago and all of a sudden something is happening, the breaking news aspect of it.
Now, I've got a Trendistic, I believe, is the website right here, and it shows me getting almost above 0%. And I know that sounds preposterous, but if you look at the left-hand side of the chart here, there are 0% all the way up, but they have a dash underneath that gets lighter the higher you go. So I don't know if that means that I almost got above 0% here, or maybe a 0.01% I got to. Do we know anything about what percentage a person needs to be at to trend?
No, this is the type of info that Twitter does not release, and any sort of I would say any sort of site or like tips or tips that say like, oh, how to trend, I would look at that with a suspicious eye, because that's just the info that they refuse to give up. So there you go.
All right, Carl, go ahead.
One of the things that I want to talk about is Brian and I have been discussing earlier on the show is different apps and the total iPad experience, and as these type of tablets become more and more popular and immersed, one of the things that has been a somewhat negative byproduct of the whole mobile device movement has been really the death of the newspapers and the death of periodicals in general, magazines and so forth. And I understand the idea behind the daily is to sort of bridge that gap from the traditional inbox newspaper to the mobile devices. And is that an accurate description? And just exactly, you know, what is the mission statement, I guess, of the daily? What are they trying to accomplish besides trying to be, you know, the next generation newspaper, or is that even a fair analysis?
I think the general goal is to be that sort of next generation newspaper. It's a traditional newsroom here in New York City, just like any sort of, you know, newsroom you would find, I guess, anywhere else around the world. But it's sort of, you don't have to deal with obviously the costs associated with printing, with shipping. I mean, it's all digital. We have each sort of section has its own team of designers. I'm a staff writer on the technology section, so we have about four or five guys who are just dedicated to making sort of each story just look more interesting than just a plain old newspaper article, but something more interesting than you'll find in a typical blog or a typical website. So I mean, it's very much just trying to be that sort of an evolution of the newspaper. Just trying to be the newspaper for, I don't know, for the next number of years. It's sort of hard to describe. I mean, it's a daily publication. It comes every morning in your in iOS 5, the newsstand sort of situation. And it's pretty much a newspaper for the new generation, Carl. It's sort of hard. I mean, it's sort of hard to describe. I mean, I'm not really privy to sort of the high level mission statements as such. I'm merely a reporter, but I think that what they're generally just trying to do is try to be, you know, a newspaper for the times, I suppose.
As it fits into the new mobile application era, where I mean, it's we live in a, I've often described it as a microwave world, and that's not even accurate anymore. It's actually faster than that, where everything is just so on demand constantly. I understand that one of the advantages of the daily, as far as the newspaper goes, is that the information is updated somewhat, where you don't just get one newspaper a day, but actually right. Information is updated. Is that correct?
Yes. There is the morning edition that shows up around 5 a.m. every morning, but it does get updated several times a day. I mean, it depends on the day. It depends what's going on, but so the app is updated several times a day. If anything particularly big breaks, there will be a story in there. So yeah, it's not necessarily like Twitter sort of instant gratification, but it's definitely updated as the day evolves, I guess.
I got a quick question. Have you had a chance to see the New York Times app for the iPad?
No, but I have seen the Guardian's app, and that's a good one.
All right. I was just wondering how the Daily compared to the New York Times app, because it's obviously the Times app has got all the main stories from the newspaper, but I think it's updated during the day as well. I actually don't even know for sure, but I presumed it was.
Yeah.
So I was wondering how the Daily compared to that.
Well, I mean, I think the key difference is that it's designed from the ground up for the iPad. It's a publication that really only lives on the iPad. I mean, there is a blog, but that's not really too heavily stressed. So, it, I mean, it's they're basically trying to make it as like native to the iPad and as iPad-y, if that makes any sense for the readers. And I mean, just reading it, it's surprising how good some of the designs that that the guys come up with. I mean, I'm not a design guy; I have literally no talent in that regard. But it's really good with some of the guys are churning out. So,
I know one of the things that has always been difficult with the transition from traditional media to the electronic media, and I know you, this is not necessarily your area, but covering technology, I'm sure you have heard this topic discussed a lot, and that is, you know, traditional newspaper, the model it goes by. My dad worked for a traditional newspaper for several years, and it's advertising-based. I mean, you know, the newspaper isn't making money off the 50, 75 cents somebody drops in a box. They make the money off advertising, and there has been a big resistance by most advertisers to pay for content on the Internet because, let's face it, I mean, you can put up at your own expense a website on the Internet and not have to worry about advertising. And one of the reasons that newspapers have had trouble going online and going digital is advertisers aren't really willing to pay for space in an electronic media forum. Is that problem going away, or is it still a problem, or what can you think of that is helping alleviate that wanting everything on the Internet to be free, essentially,
right.
Idea that this generation seems to really have?
Well, I mean, I'm 25 years old, so I'm sort of part of that everything should be free sort of generation. Not that I necessarily believe that. But I know that the Daily is a subscription publication. I believe it's around $40 per year. And I know the New York Times recently, they put up a paywall. You can only read something like, I don't know, 20 articles per month for free. So I do see a sort of general maybe understanding that a lot of the stories people read, I mean, that costs money to hire reporters and hire editors to get that information. And maybe, it should be free to read. It's like, yes, what? Perhaps, but that information comes from somewhere, and you know, a lot of the newspapers that are sort of going out of business, it's weird because those are the guys who are doing the nitty gritty news gathering that we are, that I guess the generation is just sort of used to, or they now expect to read for free. But no, I think more broadly we're seeing more of an acceptance of the idea that even if something is digital, it has value, and you shouldn't be afraid to pay for it with services like Netflix and iTunes and you know, things like that, that people are now starting to, I guess, become more comfortable with the idea that, okay, just because I'm not holding a physical newspaper or magazine in my hand doesn't necessarily mean that this news story sort of came out of the ether and, you know, it's mine for free. So I think generally people are starting to maybe not get the picture. That may be sort of a mean way to put it, but I think becoming a little bit more comfortable with the idea of paying for digital content, I guess, more broadly. I mean, look at the Kindle Fire is coming out in a few days, and that's going to be all about people, you know, using their Amazon Prime subscription, which is $80 a year, to stream movies and music and read books and that type of thing. So I think we're reaching the point where people are now no longer necessarily demanding everything for free. I think I think those days are slowly sort of going away. I mean, they have to go away. This type of stuff can't be available for free, you know, 24/7 for the rest of, you know, eternity. It has to pay for itself in some you know, capacity. So yeah, I guess generally we're sort of moving away from the free sort of demand from the public.
I've noticed some of the people that have made that transition work. You know, while music piracy is still out there, I don't think it's nearly as prevalent as it was a few years ago. For myself, for example, you know, three or four or five years ago, everyone I knew downloaded music illegally through some sort of aggregating service. Now, right. You know, I go to Amazon and pay a dollar for what song I want and download it legally that way, and it's just quick and it's easy to do. And you brought up Netflix is a great example. I mean, you know, people for the last several years have, you know, illegally streamed movies and downloaded them. Well, now it's just, you know, it's simpler. I can turn on my big screen TV by way of my Roku and get my Netflix subscription and watch it. So why would I want to go through all the trouble of illegally downloading or pirating something when at a touch of a button I can get it legally and for very little expense? And I think that's one of the things that, that maybe The Daily is trying to do, is make it ease of use seems to be the number one thing as far as getting people to legitimately pay for a service where, you know, I want it to be easy to obtain, and I'm willing to pay a little bit for it if it's easy to obtain and on demand when I need it. And, you know, covering technology and stuff, doesn't it, or does it, or am I wrong here, that it seems to me like on demand is the way everything's going now?
No, I believe you're 100% correct. I mean, you know, anecdotally, I can sort of agree that, you know, maybe 2005, 2006, a lot of my friends were more into the whole music downloading and movie sort of downloading scene. But really, a lot of the problem was that there was no real sort of legal, easy-to-use alternative. If someone wanted to, you know, download or listen to the new, I don't know, pop album, there was no real easy way to do it. And then all of a sudden iTunes shows up, and, oh, within two clicks, I had the whole album, and, you know, I don't mind paying $10. The problem wasn't that I didn't want to pay. It was just that there was no, I didn't want to drive, you know, half an hour to Best Buy or whatever to pick up the disc and then rip it and put it on my iPod. So yeah, and in that sense, you're 100% correct. And you're correct as well that it is just moving to a sort of an on-demand sort of world. Like people don't want to, I guess, wait anymore, as sort of weird as that may sound with Twitter on your phone every 2 seconds with, like, you know, breaking news updates and all that type of thing. People are now just sort of used to the idea of sort of curating their own sort of, like, digital experience with they can have the Netflix queue and the only the movies they want. They can have Google TV and they set it up so that, you know, they only record, you know, the shows that they like, and they don't have to put up with, you know, 200 channels of things they don't want when all they really want is, I don't know, like a movie channel or whatever. So yeah, it's moving to more of an on-demand sort of a la carte, like pay for what you want, but people are sort of, they're fine with the pay part now, I guess.
Yeah,
all right.
And one of the things too that is being discovered by of all industries, the comic book industry is right in the middle now of this really taking advantage of digital media. And DC, which is one of the larger, was owned by Warner Brothers, has gone day-to-date shipping. The same day you can get the comics in the stores, now you can get it on your iPad. And Marvel, which is the largest comic company, has just announced that by March of next year, all their titles will be day of date as well. And what they've discovered is there's as much business on online and on mobile applications as there is in the traditional sort of media. So I'm thinking, it's looking to me like people are now just discovering, let's just stop fighting against it. That's just the way it is. And with The Daily, instead, again, let's just, like you pointed out, you know, I wish I could get my local newspaper on my mobile device instead of, you know, having to go out and find, go to the store and get one out of the box and have to deal with the paper and all that stuff. But the resistance of advertisers over the years has seemed to have been really the holdback for that. And it's good to see that a lot of different media are now discovering a way to be profitable with that, because, I mean, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here by saying the old newspaper magazine model is just not going to work very much longer.
No, I don't see how it could. I mean, I think it was Condé Nast who, when Apple released iOS 5 a few weeks ago, they said that you know, their app subscriptions to their magazine, they went up by like 200%. So I mean, we're seeing again that people are getting comfortable with the idea of paying for stuff. It was a lot of it had to do with just the ease of use. And if you can have, let's say, The Daily automatically show up on your iPad every morning as soon as you wake up, I mean, that's a whole, you know, that's a relief. You don't have to go to the store. You can read it on the train, you know, on your commute. It's just there. And the same thing, you know, if if you like Wired Magazine or Esquire or any of those sort of, you know, sort of general interest publications, they're all finding out that, you know, just because you have an app doesn't, I mean, that's a really good idea to, is what I mean to say. It's a really good idea to have sort of a digital sort of, I guess, presence. And like you said, with the comic books, DC and Marvel, I mean, I personally read, Batman. I'm a sort of a Batman, I guess, Mark, you would say. And, I read them on my iPad, and it's great. It's genuinely great. Every, you know, every month or whatever, when it comes out, it just pops up. You click okay, and it's there. I mean, I don't see, it's wonderful. I don't know how else to describe that. So.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, that I thought would be a major detriment to the comic book industry going digital is the collectability of it. You know, it's always been ingrained in collectors to hold on to the print copy because some increase in value, and not a lot anymore, but some have. But the digital experience now is better because it's more, the art's more vivid. You have zoom in, zoom out capabilities. You can, even though you don't have the physical copy in your hand, and it's just, as example with the daily, I mean, you have, I understand that you have video and you have ways of streaming content. It's not just like reading a paper. It's not interactive.
Yeah, no. We have in the newsroom, we have an entire television studio. We have video content, a lot of multimedia stuff, in addition to, you know, just the plain, you know, text articles. So, yeah, I mean, it's not to heap too much praise upon the iPad, but it's really a device, and just tablets more generally, that it seems to be transforming media generally in this country, I guess, for the better. I mean, like in my iPad right now, I have The Daily, I have The Guardian, I have a whole bunch of comic books, I have all these sort of publications from all these sort of European sort of things that I could probably not even find here in the city, and all of a sudden I could read them, you know, on the train going home, all of them, and it's you know, it weighs, you know, what does an iPad weigh? Very little. So, I mean, it's great. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. And as media companies sort of figure out how to sort of charge for that, which, again, they're slowly figuring out, and people are slowly sort of getting okay with that, I mean, it's just better for everyone, I think. I mean, I hope.
All right, we got to wrap it up. But, Nicholas, I want to get a chance to get in some plugs for The Daily and anything else that you are doing right now. And some point down the road, we'll have you on for another full show and just talk about all sorts of different things technology-wise, more so than we talked about today. And I'm going to enlist you as my trainer for my rematch against WWE in this Twitter trending battle. Next time, I'm going to beat Raw. So the floor is yours.
Well, first, that sounds fantastic. Well, The Daily, it's a daily sort of newspaper on the iPad. I believe it'll be launching on Android tablets. I believe the official word is this autumn. So, you know, this autumn, that's as much as I know. It's on the Apple iTunes App Store. It's on iOS 5. It shows up on the newsstand every morning. I'm a staff writer there, and I cover technology with some sports stuff on the side. But it's like I was saying, it's sort of a newspaper for the digital era. I guess that's the hope and that's the plan. And I think they're doing a pretty decent job. I mean, I'm not just saying that because I work there, but it's actually pretty good. I guess that's all my plugs. I have a Twitter, but I don't really use it, so there's no point in plugging that.
You're not trending on it right now. Not trending on it yet. All right,
no,
everybody.
No. Okay.
All right, Nicholas, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. And Carl, of course, thanks as always for doing the show. We got to head out of here, but we'll be back next week with a brand new show. Check out the website, afterdarkradioshow.com. And, of course, Carl, very quickly, let's get your plugs in, carlstern.com and more.
Yeah, carlstern.com and Dragon King Carl on Twitter.
So check those out. And, again, we'll be back next week. Check out afterdarkradioshow.com, and we'll talk to you again after a while.